hear the Good Neighbor Network, FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, audio and video streaming at WGNSradio.com. This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Bart Walker.
Welcome in. Today, we're talking with Detective Sergeant Amanda McPherson with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. I don't know if you know this, but April is National Child Prevention Abuse Month. Amanda, good to have you visiting with us this morning.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Well, tell us a little about Child Abuse Prevention Month. Tell us how did it get started? And I know we have a problem of that here in our community, but is it as big of a problem as other? Or one problem is bad enough.
Yes, sir. It's a large problem here, well, everywhere nationally, and so we've done several things to try to combat that with resources. And so National Child Abuse Prevention Month came around in order to, you know, let the community know the problems that are going on, help them, you know, understand resources that we have available, and just really bring the spotlight to it. Every year there's a theme, and this year the theme is doing things differently. And that's about moving from the challenge to the change. And what that does is try to just enhance the protective abilities of the family and the community that we already have. The way we kind of do that is through raising awareness, supporting families and the good things that they already have going, and making people aware of resources that are out there that a lot of people don't know they have access to.
When you look at a family that has child abuse in there, is there a way to recognize that before it becomes abuse and perhaps turn it around?
There are. Obviously, there's things that we like to support better. There are families that have struggles that they're going through. I don't think that you can just necessarily look at a family and say, hey, they're going to have issues just based on certain factors. But obviously, things like social media use, children's alone time where they're not having any kind of activity and they're allowed on their own devices. A lot of parents don't understand nowadays how children are able to get into sextortion and sexual exploitation. Things like Xboxes and PlayStations can get on the internet, and a lot of people don't know that they can access those. So when I was growing up in the 80s, when I got sent to my room, it was nothing in there. You know, that my punishment was sit alone, or maybe I had my box TV. Nowadays, kids get in there and they have a cell phone, they have TVs that can access the internet. The smart TVs are able to get onto many different websites, use all the social media apps. The same, we're seeing a lot of juveniles fall prey to predators that are getting on, like I said, the PlayStation. They think they're playing a game, and then they get a message, they start talking, and then they ask for pictures or, you know, sexually explicit things, and they fall, you know, into that trap. Unfortunately, no one is there to have those conversations or really monitor, you know, their online use, because a lot of parents just don't know that.
A while back, we had some folks talking, this was several years ago, how sex trafficking is a major issue in Rutherford County, mainly because we're on the interstate that is between Nashville and Atlanta. Is it still true? Has it gotten worse? Do you see any improvements, Watts?
I do see improvements. It's obviously still a large problem, and a lot of people are ignorant to that because, like I said, I was raised in an era where internet wasn't big, and so now we have seen cases where people have traveled across state lines in order to, you know, unfortunately prey on our youth here in Rutherford County. But we've done a lot to combat that, and we've put out a lot of programs. A lot of people don't know, like I said, what their children have access to, and it used to be that our at-risk youth were the ones that were primarily being targeted for things like that, and now our A students are having issues with it, and a lot of it starts in the home where families, you know, we would sit down for dinner all together, and now just because of how the world is, you know, a lot of times children are left alone in their rooms, kind of to their own devices, and so they have access. Again, when I was growing up, we had a lot of family conversations about what was right, what was wrong, what to look out for. But as the world changes, I think we have to keep up so that guardians, parents, just all of us together as a community are a place where kids can come talk about things and they don't look to the internet, you know, to ask questions that they could get wrong answers for or be, you know, kind of persuaded into things that they don't want to.
We used to think that kids were abducted and taken into that terrible area. But it sounds like they're being sought after through the internet more nowadays.
Very much so. And, you know, one thing about people, unfortunately, that prey on people is they evolve just as well as everybody else, sometimes better. They know what to look for. And so now they used to, you know, years ago, they would have to seek out a child physically in public, you know, and now they can just get online. For instance, on the Snapchat app, you can add a friend and you don't have to have any checks or balances to go through that. You just simply say, hey, I want to be friends with Mandy. And then it pops up and then they can start saying whatever they want. So imagine a 12-year-old that gets a friend request from somebody. And a lot of times they just kind of just take a shot at it. And so they will, they don't know if you're an 80-year-old man, a 40-year-old man, or a 15-year-old girl, and they just try. A lot of it's based on your likes, the emojis you put, pictures you put up there, and that's why it's important to really monitor what your children have out there, because once they find somebody and they start to speak to that person, a lot of times they groom them, and grooming is to do things to make them feel comfortable. They may make them feel special. You know, sometimes girls especially will say, oh, well, my father and I don't have a great relationship. Well, that's, they're like, oh, I could be that for you. I'm your friend. And they get them really comfortable. They'll send gifts, believe it or not, sometimes, or promise gifts. Tell the girls, especially, you know, about their looks and things based on photos. And then once they feel that they have that comfortability in that relationship, then it's much easier to prey upon them and manipulate them. And parents, like I said, they just don't know that the child may be talking for 3 or 4 months to somebody that's really working on that relationship. And then by the time, you know, they've already traveled here, now we're obviously at a very heightened problem.
Let me ask you this, because I know that with your cold cases at the Sheriff's Department and any law enforcement agency, You want to get back children who disappeared 15, 20 years ago. You always have that hope that they're still alive. They were abducted usually. Compared to today's, who were not really, they were mentally abducted, I guess you could say, but a whole different situation. The two are so different. Is there still a good chance with the changes that we've seen in society? Do they both still have a chance to be found and in good shape?
Oh, yes. And a lot of them actually, unfortunately, are actually physically taken, or sometimes willingly go, you know, like I said, because predators have evolved into learning that that relationship is important. We do still see children obviously abducted where they are physically taken, but a lot of times they are coerced to go. And so it's not as it used to be as much where it's, you know, the physical, hey, I'm going to grab you and run off. And that still does happen, but we've almost made it easier on predators to find children, to have that conversation and to get them to go willingly. And I do think that we have come up with a lot of different resources. We have many multidisciplinary teams now that we have in order to, you know, from like the Department of Children's Services, from the Child Advocacy Center to law enforcement to the District Attorney's Office. We've made teams where we see different sides of it and we can bring those resources together. We have the CIPIT team now, which is the Child Protective Investigative Team. And part of that team is, instead of just law enforcement trying to figure out resources, we pull it together, because obviously Department of Children's Services, they see a different side of things sometimes. Their main focus is the safety of the child, which is ours as well, but we also are looking for the investigative side and the justice part of it, and we can put our heads together and really focus on the child's welfare. And, you know, like I said, if we are able to show a child what is happening and they can understand that they were manipulated, then it doesn't happen another time, and educate parents as well.
Let me ask you this. This is a strange question, but let's say a child was abducted 20 years ago. They were young. They were maybe 10 years old. Now they're in their 20s, 30s. They may not be as useful to whomever abducted them as they were initially. What do they do with those people then? Do they become an abductor, or do they become, or do they continue to try to escape?
I think there's a lot of different ways that can play out. I mean, obviously they can try to escape forever. You know, sometimes, unfortunately, they are killed because they're no longer of use at a certain time. They may make them become someone that goes out and lures children. You know, obviously, if they have abducted a female, she may be able to help with bringing in, you know, younger females as well, and may turn over to that side. And it's not one of those things where they do it willingly most of the time, but they have kind of realized they're stuck in this situation, and usually they are pressured into doing that through threats of violence or whatever when they do turn to help, you know, the predator. But I know there are plenty of people that have tried to escape for many years and have been able to get out, but it's always a work in progress, and we know that there are people out there that we still have to continue to fight for.
So the main thing is for you to find them, because it's more likely that you will find them than them getting out without you finding them.
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, there's always the chance, you know. A lot of people have that spirit where they, you know, will fight until the end to get free. We've heard several stories in the news lately, you know, of children that have been taken, and many years later they were able to find a window. And people are resilient and they're smart. A lot of times they're able to make friends with their abuser enough that they gain trust and can get out. But obviously, we would much prefer to locate them years before they have to go through that. You know, we would like them to find them right as it happens, you know, so that no child or person in general has to go through anything more than.
Well, we've talked to detectives about cold cases where there's a murder, things of that sort, and they've always talked about how the longer the time has passed, people are more willing to share information.
Right.
Is it true with abductees who are in the sex trafficking?
Yes, I think it's true with anything. I mean, obviously, as time goes on, neighbors may be less scared to speak, or, you know, if they're scared of somebody and enough, that's why the media is important, you know, people like you to help us get the word out, because people will say, hey, there's enough people talking about this, I don't have to be scared, or there's awareness to it. You know, a neighbor may not even know something's going on until somebody brings light to it, or they don't know who to call. And, you know, I do think that as the years go on, people will talk, but right when it happens, people will as well. You know, if you can get to them and make them understand the importance of it and bring awareness to it.
So quickly, is a minute, if you see something that's just, you don't know for sure that you saw what you saw, still call the police.
Yes, and write down what you saw. You know, as you're doing it, make a little note, do a voice note, something to say, hey, there, I saw a gentleman, this is what he looked like, a general description. Get us the best that you can. Snap a photo if you can safely. You know, obviously don't put yourself in danger, but get us everything that you can and call right then. I would rather you call with something that turns out to be nothing than, I have a lot of people that'll say, man, that seemed weird to me, but I didn't want to bother you guys. It's never a bother. Call us. That's our job, is to go check that out and make sure that everything's okay.
And what do you do for people who are missing still? And it's been 10, 15, 20 years. Does that case ever get so cold you just put it in the files?
We always continue to work. It's a big part of our heart is our cases. We want to rescue children and help people. And so nobody is just going to forget about a case. We continue those. Obviously, there's different advances all the time in technology and like DNA. You've seen several cases lately where someone has been missing or a crime has occurred 20, 30 years ago, and we're able to retest those items. And so if someone was abducted 20 years ago and a shirt was left behind before, we may not have been able to do anything with it, and now we may be able to get DNA off of that, or, you know, just different things and advances with technology.
Does DNA stay around forever, or does it fade away?
It will stay if it's protected properly. If we have obviously ways that we collect evidence and store it and protect it. And so as long as it's done correctly, yes, we can still test those. It obviously degrades some. And so if there's not a large sample, it is harder, but it's always worth trying because we've seen things that were teeny tiny little bits that we've been able to be successful with. So it's never a no.
So that's the interesting thing about law enforcement is technology continues to change and improve. And so things that you didn't even think about years past, you're able to do miracles with them now.
We are. There's a lot of new technologies all the time, and it's great. And it's, you know, one good thing about Rutherford County is that we try to stay on top of all the latest and greatest things so that we can keep our knowledge up. We know what's out there. And so that if something does occur, we're ready to try all the avenues that are available.
Detective Sergeant Amanda McPherson is with us this morning from the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be back and continue the conversation. If you didn't know it, this is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. We're going to be talking in just a moment about some of the other services that work to make certain that child abuse is on the downside. But even more important, if it does happen, that it will stop. We'll continue that. Stay with us.
Rutherford Issues with Brian Barrett. Weekday mornings at 10.
WGNS, your good neighbor station.
Rutherford County's place to talk.
Your 401k is likely one of your most important assets, but it's only one part of a comprehensive retirement strategy. Edward Jones can help you understand how your retirement assets fit into your entire retirement picture so that you can work toward meeting your unique retirement goals. Contact me, Lee Colvin, your Edward Jones Financial Advisor, in the Public Shopping Center on South Rutherford Boulevard, or give us a call at 615-907-7056. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. One of the other things that we're doing on the remodel is that we're putting in ceiling tiles that have a high absorption for sound and be able to enjoy their meals with their families. We're bringing a lot of the green back, and we're bringing back retro light fixtures. We've added a wall while updating the look and making it a lot more fresh. Now that you've heard about the changes that we're making at Demas's, you need to check it out, so come on over right now. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance specialist for university housing, he knows college students can major in wear and tear. Plus, housing so many students doesn't leave a lot of room to house all the supplies he needs. That's where Grainger comes in. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast, dependable delivery, Grainger carries the quality products he needs so he doesn't have to. From a new door hinge to a whole new faucet. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Why'd I go to the doctor? One day at the firehouse, I was so lightheaded I could barely stand. Even my crew noticed. Getting checked out was the right call. Turns out I have atrial fibrillation, which increases the risk of stroke about 5 times.
Symptoms like irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness can come and go. But if it's AFib, the risk of stroke remains. If you have symptoms, contact a doctor.
I'm so glad I did.
Visit notimetowait.com, sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Sunny skies here this afternoon, a high in the low 70s. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low near 46. By Thursday, partial sunshine develops, high 75. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 48.
Good morning. Wrapping up the paperwork on a crash over here near the football stadium on 24 eastbound at Shelby. It's over to the right-hand side. Still some traffic out here in certain areas. 24 up through Antioch coming westbound. We've had numerous accidents up through there this morning between Murfreesboro and Nashville, especially in the Antioch area. Still heavy 65 north, trying to get up through Spring Hill right now through that section of South Williamson County. Hey, when you need dependable towing, call STR Towing and Recovery, STR. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
This is MTSU President Sidney McPhee. You're listening to WGNS, your local connection to Blue Raider Atlanta.
WGNS AM, FM, online.
Hey, welcome back. If you want to join us in conversation this morning, text us your comments or questions. 615-893-1450. 48 degrees right now. 48. It's going to be a nice day. It already is a nice day. 48 degrees. Want to say happy birthday to Caleb Hall. Caleb is the winner of our delicious banana pudding from Slick Pig Barbecue. And our good neighbor of the day is Beverly Keel. Beverly is the dean at MTSU's Media and Entertainment Department. Beverly Keel. She'll be receiving flowers from all the folks over at Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts. Jenny Harris and the whole family over there. And they are there to help you bring a smile and happiness to whomever you send some flowers or coffee to. We're continuing the conversation this morning, and today we're talking about child abuse, how to prevent it. That's the greatest thing, is learning ways to prevent child abuse. Visiting with us from the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, Detective Sergeant Amanda McPherson. Have you always wanted to be did you always want to get into law enforcement? What caused you to do that?
No, sir. I actually, silly enough, I wanted to be an astronaut. And I took a lot of science classes at MTSU. I flew there, and my mom passed away. And so I wasn't able to afford the flight school anymore. And I started working with children. That's the job that I could find at the time, and I really had a passion for it. And somebody said, hey, you should come over to the sheriff's office and learn skills having to do with that. And so in 2008, I went, and it's where...
And you're still there.
Yes, sir. It's where God wanted me to be, and I'm there, and I've never left, and I've gotten a great passion for that.
Well, let's talk about some of the things. As children are abducted or taken into sex trafficking and things of that sort, you have a lot of people that you're able to turn to for some help and guidance in getting them back again. One of those is the Child Advocacy Center. They have a Child Protective Investigative Team. Then, of course, the Department of Children's Services. Tell us a little how that all works.
Well, as I was talking earlier, we call it the CIPIT Team, which is the Child Protective Investigative Team, and it is made up of Department of Children's Services, the Child Advocacy Center, law enforcement, the District Attorney's Office. Our kids is on that board. And what it is it's several of us all talking together about cases. When we are presented with a case, instead of just law enforcement looking at it, obviously, sometimes DCS has a better eye. They'll see something that we miss, or a child will be interviewed by the Child Advocacy Center, and they're able to say, here's some markers that I saw that I think you need to be aware of. And so we can sit down together and have meetings, which every month we come together and we discuss the cases of that month. And we really just make sure that nothing is missed and that everybody feels confident in the way that the case was handled. And for those who don't know, the Child Advocacy Center, they are not-for-profit, and they help children in Rutherford and Cannon counties. And so anytime a child is part of any kind of abuse, that child is forensically interviewed. And it's done that way so that their testimony can be used in court. And they provide more than that. However, they have tons of resources for families as far as domestic violence incidents, how to keep them safe, orders of protection to explain those to them. They have resources for families to get them safe. And again, they do that all with grants and donations. And so it's a big deal for the community to really support them. Another person on that team is Our Kids. And Our Kids is based in Nashville, but that is where a child can go to get a forensic exam if they have some type of abuse happen to them. They are trained to check on children and do it in a way that doesn't scare or further traumatize a child that has to have some kind of examination done.
So if a child is showing some signs and you get them into the center there to interview them, that can really help out a lot. But you need to get to them before then, I would guess. Do teachers, are they able to, when they see something, Are they able to report it, or is there a cloak of silence? Or
teachers are actually mandatory reporters, and so anytime they see abuse, you know, they are to call it in. But they are some of our biggest helpers. 70% of our cases right now are actually peer on peer, and we're seeing a huge rise in that, where it's child on child, it's juveniles, and so 40%, I believe, is happening within the schools.
Child on child?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Well, you don't think that's going to happen.
And they don't. And a lot of it, we believe, and studies have shown that is because, as I said, children are on social media all the time. They have access to pornography and things that they didn't have as great access to. They're seeing images that they think are healthy images, and they're not healthy images. And so they don't have anybody to ask. And so they get online and ask questions, and they, unfortunately, may talk to a predator, or they'll talk to somebody that doesn't have a healthy mindset about these things. And so they think that that's okay. And so they offend on their own peers, because that's who they have access to. Obviously, they're in school with them all day, or that's who they're hanging out with. And obviously, it used to happen a lot to siblings, you know, sibling on sibling. But and it still is occurring, but a lot of it is moving into the school setting.
So it's mostly non-family now, or is it?
So it's both. Obviously, like I said, it is siblings, but it is a lot of friends, you know, peers, people in their classes, sports teams, you know, different activities that they are with all the time and have access to.
Now, do those people, what is their motivation? Is somebody paying them money to do this?
No, I think a lot of it is improper education about, you know, sexual questions as they're growing up, and like I said, access to different, you know, and social media, unfortunately, has a lot of unhealthy images of what girls should look like as they're growing, what sex is about, what is safe and healthy, and kids, like I said, because parents are very busy, and they're so children are sat a lot, and kind of the babysitter is the cell phone nowadays, or the internet or the Xbox. They have questions, and they ask people that aren't healthy adults, safe adults, or they get online and they see things that they think are healthy. You know, they're, like I said, they're watching pornography at a very young age, and it's very sometimes violent and scary, the things that they're watching and they think is normal. And so then they decide to test that out, you know, on their peers because they're curious. But instead of asking, you know, unfortunately, it goes down a wrong path.
Now, is this something that parents are not aware of? I mean, because it's not always the parents that are the bad guys.
Right. And I don't think parents are bad guys at all. I just think it's just ignorance of it. You know, as I said, I was born in the 80s, and I couldn't get on the internet like that. We had dial-up, and it took you 40 minutes to even get connected. And nowadays, parents, they're not meaning to do anything wrong, but they have their child with a device, and a lot of it is because we don't have home phones. And so when a kid gets off the bus, they're like, hey, I want you to be able to call me in an emergency. But what they're giving a child is access to the entire world, to talk to whoever, whenever. You know, they can talk to somebody in China right now if they want, and a lot of those people will ask for images, and like I said, will groom them. So we're really giving our predators easy access to our children. And I just think a lot of parents don't know that.
I don't think people think of that.
And they don't. And, you know, as an adult, I use my phone to text and call people and look things up sometimes I want to do. But children, unfortunately, are, you know, they're curious. And so you have to think, if you have a 12 or a 13-year-old, do you really feel that they have the maturity level to make decisions about full access to the world? You know, and if you wouldn't let them go on a vacation by themselves, you know, to explore, then you're handing them a device that they can really be on the other side of the world in 30 seconds.
So things are different nowadays. Very different. And lives can be changed in an instant, it sounds like. So do we need to train the teenagers? Do we need to train the adults? Who needs to be trained on this?
Well, we're trying to do both. So a lot of our school resource officers have classes now where they're trying to talk to teens, and even all the way up to 10, 11, 12-year-olds about this, because they're getting devices as well. And to make them understand what safe searching is, sextortion, the access that they have, what grooming is, you know, the things to look out for, bullying, all those kind of things happen much more prevalent a lot of times because of the access to social media and then cellular devices. And so we're trying to start that early as we can and to stop it before it even starts. We're also trying to teach classes to parents, you know, about what to look for, where to look. There's many online really just resources like ICAC, that's the Internet Crimes Against Children. They have a task force, and there's a website you can go to. It's ICACtaskforce.org, and it has links on it about internet safety, sextortion, how to parent in the age of screens, you know, things to look for. There's even phone a parenting thing between parent and teen of, hey, you sign this and these are the things that we're going to do in order to keep you safe. You know, there are apps that you can download, like the Bark app and different things. And what those do is they actually send messages back to parents if certain keywords or if certain internet searches are done, and you can put controls on your child's phone. I think a lot of parents believe that, you know, they want their child to have their privacy and they want to, but you can never be too nosy as a parent when it comes to a cellular device and what your child's accessing. And I think a lot of parents just don't know to go look for it.
Now, back 20 years or so ago, we used to talk about bullying and how that led to some real issues among teenagers in particular. But bullying today, if you throw in social media, is it like it was in the old days, but it's on steroids this time?
It definitely is. A lot of people don't think about that, but a lot of, unfortunately, suicides stem from bullying online. And it's because, you know, as I said, when I was growing up, you had to physically be with somebody to make fun of them or give them, you know, at school we would see each other and things would get said. Nowadays, it's 24/7 access, and a lot of kids develop mental illness because they're not able to disconnect. They get home, they've had a bad day at school, something's embarrassing's happened, and maybe someone has made fun of them. Well, then they get home and the phone is still, you know, dinging with messages about, oh, did you, now so-and-so knows about what happened. And it's like they can't ever just mentally get a break. And as adults, we can't even handle that. And so you can't expect a 13-year-old to be able to navigate that mentally and deal with it.
Yeah, this my mind is weird. Sometimes you were talking about creating a suicidal tendencies with teenagers who are bullied. And I'm thinking, after a teenager has grown through the teenage years and been subjected to everything that is out there these days, is there a PTSD for being a teenager? Do some of these kids come out with the same problems, the same challenges that someone who's been in battle and had people shooting at them have had?
Well, and obviously I'm not a medical professional, so I'm not sure exactly the statistics
but you
on
see
that.
This.
Right, but I do, and there is a syndrome, and I can't think of the name of it right now, but it's basically where kids become so addicted to their devices and they receive such, I guess, negative that they're starting to see mental illness related to that. And I don't know if it rises to the level of PTSD, but I think a lot of what it does is it alters the way people react. It alters, like I said, your mental health, your brain chemistry and things like that, so that kids grow up being dependent on social media, cell phones, and 24/7 access. And so it does really change personalities, you know, which is scary for our kids.
And I'll mention this because I think it deserves being mentioned that we're having a program next week, not this week, but next week on Thursday. Peter Demas, Demas Restaurant's going to be on. And one of the conversations, one of the areas that we'll be talking about is with problems like this. And he said, the thing we need to do is get rid of social media. And I thought, how can you do that?
Well, and I don't think we're ever going to get rid of it. I think social media and the internet have great, you know, things about them. It gives us access, you know, especially with medical technology, DNA. There's a lot of things we can do because of access to that. If I want to talk to a police officer across the world about something that I've never dealt with, but they have forensically, you know, it makes it so easy to do that. I think it's social media can be a great tool. And it helps people to connect. However, it has to be used appropriately, and it has to be used by people who are mature enough to handle it. And I think a lot of it, as I said, is we're giving access to people that aren't mature enough and don't know the boundaries. You know, whereas I, an adult, I know what is right and wrong, and we're making kids make the decisions that they're not ready for.
And I think you hit it on the head when you said they get off the school bus with their phone, mm-hmm. the cell phone, because you don't have a landline
right.
anymore.
Right.
So it's that's the old landline, but it opens up a Pandora box of who knows what.
It does. And again, a lot of that is resources. You know, like I said, some families, every family knows what's best, but I think a lot of families just don't have the conversation or think about it. And I think that's where parents need to just intervene. To have the resources to understand, hey, maybe at 6 o'clock we put the phones in a basket and we don't get on social media anymore, or a parent checks to see, you know, what their child, a lot of parents, I think they don't know what the device is capable of. And so therefore they are allowing the child to have it. And if they checked and saw that, hey, there's a problem, like, why is my child searching this, or what is a complaint? You know, if a juvenile is searching pregnancy, maybe it's time for a conversation, you know. But if you don't know your child is interested in that topic, or, you know, may have already gone down that road, then you don't know to bring the conversation up or even to be worried. And that's where the early intervention comes from. And I think it's really important that the community get involved in activities and events and things that help us to support that.
Here's an interesting comment from a listener. They're saying that I think that I know I'm of an age that we used cell phones when I was growing up, so I don't think people are accustomed to having open dialogues because they were gone when I was growing up. We don't know any different.
And I agree. As I said, in college, I went to MTSU. I was there in the 2000s, and I had a cell phone, but I could send text messages that I paid for, so I'd only send two or three. You know, it wasn't unlimited. I couldn't get on the internet. It was basically just access, just call if something happened, if my car broke down. So nobody ever talked to me about safe stuff because I couldn't really do anything with the phone. And now it's so commonplace for a phone, for an Xbox, a PlayStation, a TV, to be able to access the internet. And like I said, a lot of parents, especially if they're born in a generation that doesn't have that, they don't know how to navigate that. It's not that parents are bad parents or that they're the problem. It's just ignorance of it. And that's why the education is key.
This is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, and our guest this morning from the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, Detective Sergeant Amanda McPherson. And we'll continue the conversation with Amanda in just a moment. We have the final segment of the program, so if you have a question or a comment that you want to make that's just been itching to jump out, don't let it stay hidden too much longer, because the final segment's about to happen. The number to call, 615-893-1450. Text your message to that number, 615-893-1450.
Don't throw away old flags. WGNS retires Old Glory with respect. Bring those tattered Bibles here, too. We're more than talk.
I am Charlotte Gardner. I've lived at Adams Place for 3 years. It is the friendliest place you ever could hope to be.
Was the decision to move difficult?
No, it was just a really good change. I never, ever regretted a day of moving here.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adams Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.
Friends? Yes. The financial partners whom you've built a relationship with at Old National Bank are still at the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard location, right here in the borough. and so are the warm homemade cookies.
Cookies are ready, dear.
Like Grandma used to make. If you need online and mobile banking, Murfreesboro's Old National Bank does that too. You and Old National Bank, better together.
Old National Bank at 2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard. Old National Bank, member FDIC.
Hi, this is Dave Kivenemi at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street in Murfreesboro. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course. Come out and see us for all of your music needs. We've got guitars, pianos, amps, drums, PA equipment, rentals, lessons, most anything you can think of in the music genre. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den on South Church. We're across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
Hey, this is Taylor with Bell Jewelers. Come shop with us for Mother's Day this year. Mother's Day is Sunday, May 11th. Come see us at Bell Jewelers for Mother's Day. We have different options, stack bands that represent the family's birthstones or engravable necklaces that you can do with your child's name. Anything you want to give to your mother, we have it at Bell Jewelers. Bell Jewelers, 821 Northwest Broad Street, across from Toots.
We're News Radio WGNS, 100.5, 101.9, 1450, online and on your phone at WGNSradio.com.
It's 48 degrees. We are back. Final segment, 615-893-1450. That's the number to text your question to. And Detective Sergeant Amanda McPherson is with us this morning. This is Child Abuse Prevention Month. I understand you're going to have some very special activities coming up. Share with us some of those.
One of those has already passed, but I want to talk about it. It was on April 11th, and it was a pinwheel ceremony. And several years back, blue pinwheels became kind of the representative for child abuse, national child abuse. And so staff from DCS and members of the SIPET team met to raise awareness for the month. And so if you see those around the community, you'll see gardens everywhere of blue pinwheels. Those are people that are saying, hey, I stand up to support, preventing child abuse, and every year in April that comes back around. And so you don't have to be part of our events. You can plant those yourself, or you can know that the people that are putting those out are supporting that, businesses and different things. I believe they're still up, but in front of the Juvenile Justice Center, we had a couple hundred pinwheels there just to show our support in that. And so I just want people to know that when they see that, and the pinwheel actually became kind of the representative, because the whimsy of childhood, the whimsicalness of kids and how they are and should be able to grow and just have joy instead of having to worry about watching for predators. You know, we want to bring that back where kids can be kids and just be carefree. And so I just want people to know how important that is. On the 25th, we're actually doing what's called the Hometown Heroes Walk for Children. And that's obviously to honor Child Abuse Prevention Month. And we do present awards to local community leaders who have just done great things within our community. And so we ask that people come out and support that. It's not too late. The opening ceremony actually starts at the Civic Plaza in Murfreesboro at 11:30. And then we do a walk all the way to Oaklands Park, where there's a picnic. And so you can park at the Oaklands Park and be shuttled to the Civic Plaza to walk. You can make donations there. They have the QR codes. You can purchase shirts for your support. But like I said, a lot of this comes from funding. It helps us to do that, especially the Child Advocacy Center. You can go on to Child Advocacy Center, just type it into Google and bring up the one in Rutherford County, and you can read about what they do, how important they are, and the things that they need. They take donations, obviously monetary, but all kids that come into the center, they're having a tough day. You know, they're going to have to talk about something really tough for them and traumatic, and so they are provided with a book, a stuffed animal, and snacks. And so they ask that any new books or stuffed animals that you could drop off. That always helps them to kind of connect with a child. And then any kind of like single serve snacks or juices, because a lot of kids that come in, maybe there with a care worker because parents are no longer in the picture at the moment, foster kids, things like that. And so it's a great way for them to get a bite and just feel safe. And so we ask, you know, that any help would go a long way just to let us continue to serve, you know,
that's
as I said.
The 25th of April.
Yes, sir.
And then you meet at the Civic Plaza just downtown.
Yes, sir. Like I said, you can park at the Oaklands Park, and they will shuttle you for free over to the Civic Plaza where we start the walk. And then we all wear our shirts and just kind of cheer on as we walk all the way to Oaklands Park to show the community that we're out in support of, you know, preventing child abuse.
So you park at Oaklands Park, and they will shuttle you downtown.
Yes, sir.
Then you don't have to walk back.
Correct. And they have a light meal that they provide as well. It's usually a barbecue and chips. And it's a great way to, a lot of your first responders are there, people from the Advocacy Center, DCS, our kids. It's a great way to really connect with all of us, ask questions, sign up to volunteer, and just really see what the community is trying to do to make efforts to, you know, lessen the impact on our children here in Rutherford County.
Now, what time should you be there to park?
I would say 11 to 11:15, and then get shuttled over.
Okay. So give yourself plenty of time.
Yes, sir.
Very good. Any other activities coming up we need to know about?
That's all we have here for this month. We do it, like I said, every year, and then throughout the year, there's different fundraisers. Like I said, if you get onto the Child Advocacy Center website, then they have a calendar that kind of shows everything going on. You can contact the sheriff's office. You can contact me. I'll explain some of the stuff that we have. There's tons of ways to reach out and be involved.
But don't forget, April the 25th, the Hometown Heroes Walk. April 25th. A smart way to do this is to go to Oaklands Park, right in front of Oaklands Mansion, and park there about 11 to 11:15, something like that. A shuttle will take you downtown to Civic Plaza, which is where it begins at 11:30. You walk out to Oaklands Park, where you started from, have some lunch, and just learn more.
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. I really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. You've had some great information.
Thank you so much for letting me be here and talk.
Visiting today, Detective Sergeant Amanda McPherson from the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. This is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, and we can make that happen if we work together.
Yes, sir.
That. Amanda, thank you so very much. Stay with us. Much more to come. Right here on your good neighbor station, WGNS.